720 WGN, Mike Steven filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Just rocking some harp tunes, some Charlie Musselwhite. I love the harmonica. It's one of my favorite instruments of all time. And I saw this article on collectorsweekly.com, and I thought this was, as a harp player, as a musician, I thought this was a great article. It's called How a Gang of Harmonica Geeks Saved the Soul of the Blues Harp. And it's written by senior editor of collectorsweekly.com, Ben Marks. To talk about all things harmonica, he joins us here on the phone this morning. Ben, welcome to WGN.
Well, good morning or good evening.
It's depending on how you look at it, especially if you're a gigging musician, you know, this could be a pretty late night for you.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely. Now, hold on, Ben. I brought my own harp. I'm a harp player, so I've got to do this.
Oh, let's hear.
There we go.
Okay, and so what are you playing?
I'm playing a Hohner Special 20 Marine Band in the key of D.
Right, okay, so John Popper's harmonica.
That's, I guess people would know it. That's right, he plays the Special 20 harps. I like them just because it's a nice response for a harp player. I think it's an all-around pretty solid version of the harp.
Right, right, and it's got that that plastic comb, so as Mickey Raphael told me, it's a kind of harmonica you can pound nails with.
That's true. It's a great all-around gigging harp. Could take a lot of abuse. And I think this article that you wrote, first of all, it is extensive. If you are into the harmonica, you got to check out this article again. It's on collectorsweekly.com, How a Gang of Harmonica Geeks Saved the Soul of the Blues Harp. So you start out this article, Ben, talking about how the harmonica has had a rough patch recently, I guess fairly recently. In the mid-70s, like the 70s to the mid-1990s, Hohner, which is the biggest harmonica manufacturer in the world, they were cutting corners. There were some problems with Hohner.
Yeah, I actually updated the article also for craftsmanship.net, which is down the hall from us. But both articles go into, how in the 70s, all these players were going into shops, and they just couldn't find a harmonica that would play right, and they all sounded breathy, and they all, you'd play them hard once, and they'd go right out of tune. And, I was talking to Lee Oscar, who used to play for War.
Mm-hmm.
He told me a story which the guy behind the counter at the music store confirmed for me. And he said, he would go in and just buy every harmonica they had in the store and basically leave 9 out of 10 of them on the counter and walk out with, the 1 out of 10 good ones that was what he called gig worthy.
So he'd try all those harps, and then the one that he felt was the best,
he'd pay for him too, because he's blowing on him.
Right.
But he didn't care. He was, a rock star at that time.
Right. And he has his own harmonica, actually.
He does. Yeah. Yeah, he does. And, he's a very melodic player. He's different than the Chicago stuff that you were just playing and that just introduced your show.
Right, right. And that's interesting because, you think of the harmonica, and it's one of these instruments. I started playing this instrument when I was like 17, so it wasn't cool, let's just say, to play the harmonica when you're in high school. Everyone was playing guitar, bass, or drums. And here I come, blowing on the harp. It's one of these instruments that either people will automatically conjure up the blues or folk music or country music. And I think, for this instrument, this very small instrument, there are a variety of maybe notions that aren't true necessarily. And, it's just the harmonica. It's just a stupid little instrument. I think some people have these notions, these preconceived notions of what this instrument actually is.
Well, and similarly, the folks at Hohner in Germany in the 70s, they, and even into the 80s and early into the 90s, the executives there had no idea what was going on in the United States. They had no idea why the blues and rock and roll was interesting, and frankly, they didn't like it. They thought that bending notes represented a malfunction in their instrument, so they were completely out of touch with how The best harmonica players on the planet were using, you know, this device that they had created, which was, you know, like 100 years old.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of people to kind of work within Hohner and from the outside to sort of educate him about, you know, how important it was that the holes in the reed plates that the reeds vibrate through, that those tolerance be really tight, because otherwise these players aren't going to be able to make the sounds they want to make. They'll have no control.
That's right.
Instrument.
And you raise a point there. You said bending notes. And, you know, if we've ever listened to music, we've heard guitar notes be bent. It happens all the time, especially in blues. And you were saying right there that, oh, man, you know, the execs at Hohner were saying now they want to bend the notes of a harmonica. But really what that means is something like this, like a. So it's very bluesy. It's what we all know as blues
right.
harp. That's very important in playing blues harp.
And you know, what listeners may not understand, I mean, you know, the hole that you were drawing out of on that note, that hole, there's actually a reed above it, and then there's a reed below it on each of the reed plates. And so when you do something in your throat that, as I understand it, lengthens the air chamber that's in your throat, it allows not only the draw reed to vibrate, and it pulls it a couple of degrees of pitch closer to the blow reed, which is at the top of the harmonica. And so now you're actually making the blow reed vibrate and make a sound, even though it shouldn't be when you're bending a note like that. So that's why the people at Hohner thought it was a malfunction. And it's not and it's not just one reed that's vibrating. In other words, it's two. And the combination of the two gives you that bent note.
So you write about how the blues harp, the soul of this instrument, was saved. So we've been talking about how it went through a rough patch, the harp overall. But how did it come around? Because all of a sudden, when some players found out that, you know, look, the quality of these harmonicas isn't what it should be, things started to change when these players asked some questions.
Yeah, there were two things that happened, really. One was a guy named Steve Baker, who was a London-born harmonica player, and he was in a band that had three harmonica players, actually, called Have Mercy. And so they settled in Hamburg, and he ended up going into the Hohner warehouse that was in Hamburg and picking out harmonicas for the band. And, you know, finally, once he learned enough German, he was like, you know, what the heck's going on, guys? Why are these harmonicas so bad?
Yeah.
And those guys relayed his complaints and critiques to Hohner headquarters. At the same, at the same time, and by the late 80s, there was a guy working for Hohner US named Rick Epping, and he was trying to get Hohner to correct some of the sloppy work that was going on in the factory. What they were doing is they weren't sharpening their cutting tools, and they, in some cases, they weren't replacing tools that needed to be replaced. So they were just kind of like coasting, right? And
yeah.
They were resting on their laurels. They were even doing things like Hohner used to tune all their harmonicas, and each reed would be tuned three times, and there'd be rest periods in between the tunings and all this kind of stuff. They got rid of all that because they were just trying to maximize the profit. And so you ended up with a lot of sloppy work and a lot of disgruntled harmonica players going, you know, what the heck's going on? So, so it was a combination of those two guys working both within Hohner and without. And then meanwhile, there was this whole customizers movement that was happening. And you had people like Joe Felisco and Joliet, and you had people like Richard Slay, and down in New Zealand, there was a guy named Brendan Power. And in San Jose, there's a guy I talked to named Kenya Pollard. And these guys were all trying to figure out the same thing, and they were correcting manually all the mistakes that Hohner had made in the factory to sort of bring the harmonicas up to where they should be. And that was, you know, kind of a slap in the face for the execs at Hohner. And quite naturally, they resented it. And it took a while for Steve Baker in particular to convince them that, you know, they should listen to these customizers. and try to do some of the things they were suggesting.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ben, we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what you wrote in your article. We'll talk about the new kinds of harps that are out there, because you write that the harmonica is going through a little bit of a renaissance these days, and it's really exciting as a harp player to see what kind of innovations coming out there. There are a lot of great harmonica players out there. You mentioned Joe Felisco from the Chicagoland area, from Joliet. We'll talk about him and everything else having to do with the harmonica. Can you hang on?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Again, Ben Marks is a senior editor at collectorsweekly.com. We're talking about his article, How a Gang of Harmonica Geeks Saved the Soul of the Blues Harp. I love it. Hold on, I'll play us out. Mike Steven, in for Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Mike Steven in for Nick DiGilio this morning here on 720 WGN. A little blues for you this morning, courtesy of Sugar Blue. Playing all over Chicago, as a matter of fact. We're talking about the harmonica, one of the greatest instruments of all time. Love the harp. We're talking with Ben Marks, who is a senior editor at collectorsweekly.com. He wrote an article called How a Gang of Harmonica Geeks Saved the Soul of the Blues Harp. It's a great read. We'll link up to it on WGNradio.com. And, you know, I said before the break, Ben, that we talk about where the harmonica is right now, because it's in a bit of a renaissance, as you say in your article. And now you've got these customizers out there, these harpsmiths, I guess you call them.
Yeah.
These people who are really technical, crafty, taking apart the harmonica, rebuilding the instrument, and innovating it.
Well, and that's the first thing you said, taking apart. I mean, that was the main complaint about the Marine Band. It was put together with nails, these little brads. And so if you took it apart, it was took some doing to get it back together again and not have there be, you know, air leaks and that sort of thing. So one of the first things the customizers did was to use screws, of course, because then you could take, you know, the harmonica is like a sandwich. There are these two, you know, plates on the outside, and then there are the two reed plates, and then there's the comb in the middle. And so it's these like five layers, and it's, you know, logic dictates that if you put this thing together with screws, then you're going to be able to get into it and tune those reeds up, which is a little tricky to do, but I watched it, and there's actually some videos on the website of a guy, you know, tuning harmonica. And you can see him do it. It's kind of amazing.
It's really cool to watch him because, as a harp player, sort of the bane of my existence is when a reed goes flat and you think to yourself, okay, now I've got to take this thing apart. And what you're supposed to do is take a file and file the reed down, because there are very thin reeds on both sides, the top and the bottom, of, as you said, of the harmonica. And now we're supposed to file it down. And for a long time, I would just think, okay, you know what? Maybe I'll just go out and buy a new harp, because it's a pain in the butt, at least for me, to take this thing apart. But you profile some really, I think they're fascinating, these little shops that they're almost like little workshops you'd find in your basement or your garage, where they're working on nothing but harps.
Well, Kenya's workshop is literally behind his house in a garage. And it's just the coolest room I've ever been in. I mean, it's just, I have so many pictures of that thing, and there's a bunch of them on the site. You know, the other thing that, you know, like Lee Oscar's solution in the mid-'80s when he started his harmonica company was, let's just sell replacement reed plates.
Yeah.
And let's sell replacement reed plates, so not only when the thing goes out of tune, but then you could use the main body of the harmonica, which is not going to wear out, and you could use it to, you know, play in C instead of D or whatever you want. So, you know, that was another innovation. That was another innovation that came along out of all of this.
And I see here on your website, like you said, you've got some great pictures of harmonicas that have been customized. There's one where the comb, I believe it's the comb. Yeah, it is the comb. It's made of corian, where you, like that's something you'd find in your kitchen.
Yeah, Kenya uses that stuff a lot. He loves it because you know, the reason why it works well in a kitchen is because it's waterproof and that sort of thing. And the inside of harmonicas are subjected to a lot of saliva and such. So, you know, you don't want something that's going to change shape when it comes in contact with water. That was what was happening, actually, with the marine bands. And, you know, as Kenya says in the piece, he said, if at the end of the gig your lips weren't bleeding, then you were considered a weenie. And what was happening is that the pear wood, which is what the combs of the marine bands used to be made of, mm-hmm. the pear wood would swell up with water, and then they would dry out, and then they would swell up again and dry out, and eventually they would crack. And the combs would actually elongate, and they'd, you know, cut your lips. And I talked to one guy who said, yeah, he used to use a carpet knife to, you know, file off the ends of the combs when they got too bad, you know. So
Wow. You also talk about Joe Falisco from right here in Chicagoland, and he is really an innovator when it comes to the harmonica. He is a harmonica instructor, he's a great player, and he's also designed his own harmonica for Hohner, as a matter of fact. And he has had a big contribution in the way the harmonica has grown over the years.
Well, you know, and Joe was one of the few customizers. He may have been the only one, but he had an actual machine shop. So it wasn't like he was just kind of tinkering around with files. You know, he could really, you know, machine something. And so he would, you know, change the shape of the cover plate, for example, so that, you know, really long reeds. In some marine bands, if you were bending a note and playing it really hard, the thing would actually vibrate so much that the reed would hit the cover plate. And so, obviously, that's unacceptable. So Joe and Richard Slay figured out how to redesign the cover plates so that those reeds weren't, you know, hitting this piece of metal, which is not the sound you want, right, when you're playing harmonica. So they did things like that. They also, Joe and Richard, you know, they came up with the what became known as the Falisco method, where you kind of tune a harmonica depending on how somebody plays. So, for example, if somebody plays very melodic, you know, plays a lot of melodies, you know, you might want to tune them more what's called temper tuning, more straight up. But if they're playing lots of chords or combinations of notes or things like that, you might want to do what's called just intonation. And then depending on the player, it might be like a little bit in between all of that. So it's kind of listening as a harpsmith, if you will, to your client, the player, and coming up with the perfect tuning for them. You know, that gets pretty rarefied pretty quickly, because probably for most of us, that's, you know, you're going to be fine with the tuning that the harmonica comes with.
Yeah. And talking about the resurgence of the harmonica, you mentioned him, John Popper, we mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
In 1995, he sort of came out of nowhere, it seemed. And by the way, those early Blues Traveler records are great. And then here comes John Popper with Runaround. And everybody, if you play the harmonica, someone's going to ask you, hey, can you play Runaround? And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Not like John Popper can, you know?
Yeah.
You know? But he had a big role in revitalizing this instrument.
He really did, and you know, and in some ways it's kind of bittersweet because the instruments are better than they've ever been, flat out. You talk to, you know, all of these people I spoke to who were big critics of Hohner back in the day are equally praiseworthy of what they're doing now. They're putting out really good instruments, and they're all assembled by hand and that sort of thing. But the problem is there hasn't been like some radio play. There hasn't been a hit to sort of get kids, I guess, interested in the instrument again. You know, so it's almost like, you know, Rihanna or somebody's going to have to come out with a pop tune that has a harmonica in it for people to pay attention to it, or something like that, or Taylor Swift. I don't know what.
Well, that would do it. That would put it over the edge if Taylor Swift did it.
Yeah, but it's going to take something like that for people to go, oh yeah, right, I love that sound, and they just kind of forget because they're busy and they're, you know, focused on whatever they're focused on, And the harmonica is a wonderful instrument. I really think so.
Yeah, I love playing it. And you're right. You know, when you walk into the room and then you pull out the harmonica, it's a lot less intimidating, you know, than if someone came in with a nice Fender guitar or a nice Gibson guitar and pulled that thing out and started wailing. Although if you can play the harp really well, I think a lot of people are surprised because, again, it's such a small instrument, but the sound is so big, or it can be so big, especially here in Chicago where the blues came and got amplified. And that was, you know, right. The Chicago blues, that's sort of the influence that that this city has, is that whole bigger, fatter, thicker sound.
Yeah, Little Walter.
Oh, right. Through a Taxi Dispatch microphone, right? That's what he played through?
Yep, that's it. You know, Lee Oscar told me, he said, you know, the harmonica was designed for the musically hopeless. And he considered himself one of those musically hopeless people. But, you know, it is also something that you can really become a virtuoso at. And, you know, I mean, if you've, you know, I think it would, we would agree that people like Joe Felisco and Lee and the rest of them are definitely virtuosos.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking like Corky Siegel, Howard Levy. They're both here in the Chicagoland area. And those guys are incredible.
Jason Ricci.
That's right.
Gary Smith, have you heard him?
Yes, I have. Awesome. I mean, and I played some Charlie Musselwhite before. He's, you know, had an incredible career, Sugar Blue. So there are a lot of virtuosos out there on the harp, and, you know, it's just a great instrument. It is my favorite instrument. I love playing it. And if you like the harmonica, or if you're just into, you know, technology, because there is a technology element to this with taking apart the harp and sort of re-engineering it, check out the article, How a Gang of Harmonica Geeks Saved the Soul of the Blues Harp. It's by Ben Marks. He is a senior editor at collectorsweekly.com. It's a great read. Lots of pictures, lots of video, and of course, just a great story that you write. Ben, thanks so much for talking to us this morning about the harp.
Well, thanks for the call.
You got it. Mike Steven, harping away here. Hold on. On 720 WGN.